This is Monocle on Design, a show where we unpack everything from architecture and craft to furniture and fashion. I'm Nick Manise. On today's show, we're in Milan for Salone del Mobile, the world's largest furniture fair held at the Row Fairgrounds. Running from today until this Sunday, the 21st of April 2024, there are a host of showcases, events and exhibitions taking place across Milan as part of what is unofficially known as Milan Design Week. So join us here at our very noisy home in the House of Switzerland, Milano, which is in Brera, and we're hosting radio here all week. For the next 30 minutes, we will be on Monocle on Design, where we're going to speak to some of our favourite designers who are in the Lombard capital. All that coming up next. Welcome to today's show, coming to you, I was going to say live, it feels like we're live, Grace Charlton, from Monocle Radio's pop-up studio in Milan at the House of Switzerland. You're a huge contributor to Monocle on Design. You've been out in the field, on the streets of Milan, reporting, I guess, from Salone del Mobile, from Milan Design Week events in the city. Tee us up, what's the mood like in Milan?
Well, it feels like I'm the only person actually going to the fair in Row. Some people are a little bit shocked that I'm going full stop, to be honest, I'm not going to lie. But I think because there's just so much going on in the city and it's a beautiful day in Milan, why would you want to be inside a fair? But it's all good. It's important to do both.
But tell me about the significance of the fair. I mean, I know I personally like going for Salone Satellite, which is the young designers. Are you going to be checking that out? What's your vibe?
Of course. I think that's honestly one of the best parts of all of Milan Design Week, is going to Salone Satellite and seeing what the young designers are up to and how they're innovating and approaching design in, you know, with fresh eyes. That's quite rare, fresh eyes. Do you remember having those?
Unfortunately, my eyes are quite droopy right now. Is that the right word? I'm tired. It is a busy, jam-packed week. And I mean, part of the reason I'm so tired is because Monocle Radio is broadcasting here through the week. We're here from 10 a.m. till 6 p.m. every day. There's a host of amazing designers being broadcast across Monocle Radio's airwaves. And also on this show, which we're going to hear from. I mean, Grace, you've done a load of interviews. Tell us who you've spoken to, who's jumped out at you. Who are we going to hear from first?
So first, we're going to hear from the Treviso-based studio Giopatto & Coombs. It consists of the Italian-English couple Cristiana Giopatto and Christopher Coombs. They are partners in life and in work, and they've got this presentation in Milan called Bruma, and it sounds very poetic. It's about like droplets in the lagoons of Venice, and they're also partaking in Alcova in the Villa Borsani.
I mean, tell me why pick them? Why did you want to speak to them?
I just really like how poetic they are about design. They work a lot in lighting, which is also a very poetic craft. They are super focused on working with their local artisans and preserving, you know, this know-how. And they spoke to me about why they do that and the importance of it.
It's so important to go there and to discuss our projects with them, because we really put together like their knowledge that belongs from hundreds of years, and our view on contemporary design. And it's something that really reinforced the project. So we start with an idea, but then also we leave the conversation that we do with them to open up new possibilities and to change also sometimes the projects.
It's a very spontaneous process. So I feel like as a studio, we feel even more creative freedom having that connection with the artisan. So, you know, sometimes you can come up with a drawing which is maybe a bit too rigid, or it's a starting point. And if you take that straight into production, you're actually missing out on a whole series of opportunities. And that like spontaneity and that casuality of the conversation with all of these artisans really brings more energy to the project.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful like collaborative process, because no designer really is alone.
Absolutely.
It takes a team. And is there like a fear of losing craft and knowledge around glass making, or do you think there's maybe a resurgence of it, like in terms of appreciation for craft?
So there's definitely an appreciation, I mean, I would say internationally, but you know, when you go right down to the specifics of that artisan, it's worrying. So we have certain techniques that we use that we know there's only one artisan who can do it in the Veneto region. Okay, so maybe there's somewhere else, you're like somewhere else in America, somewhere. But And that's worrying, you know. Maybe they're 50, 55 years old, and their sons aren't interested in that kind of work, you know, taking it on as a, you know, from generation to generation. And yeah, for sure, we worry about it. And we have to, it's exciting, the fact that we have to somehow, actually for our business, for our studio, we have to support them. We have to try and help them grow. We have to try and help sustain them. Also so that we can do what we're doing. So there's that real network effect of promoting artisans. And we promote it through the work. We promote it through the design. It's a tough subject.
Yeah, it's definitely a topic that we are thinking about. We are definitely trying to understand ways to sustain them, because we think it's really important also for the territory where we're living to maintain these skills alive. And giving to them projects, but also maybe teach new people to learn from these guys. So we are trying to understand how also we could be like a part of this ingranaggio, of this...
This motor.
This motor to sustain this knowledge in our Venetian territory is something that we are really questioning ourselves, and is part of future projects.
It can happen, you know, we go to these workshops and they actually show us pieces that they're not able to make anymore because one of their collaborators doesn't work for them anymore. And it's just insane. Actually, there was an interesting story with the Mewa collection. So the tube is it's like a free-form, three-dimensional curvature using a very highly technology tube bending machine, which is quite industrial. But they explained to us that the only way they could get those forms out of that machine was a guy that's been working for them for 40 years. And if he wasn't working for them, we couldn't have made that piece. So it's not only... It's the knowledge of material, the knowledge of processes, which is really, really strong in the Veneto region. And it's created a really exciting fabric of producers.
No, it's so nice. Also, you're presenting at Villa Borsani as part of Alcova, Flamingo. First of all, why is it called Flamingo? And can you tell me about this piece?
We generally work on something which is more or less modular. I mean, we play with modularity. And so in the case of Flamingo, we were really trying to just go against it completely. So do something which looks like a framework, but it's completely kind of chaotic. And so we came up with this very, like a random network of objects that were floating in space. The name came from the flamingo, as in the actual animal, with his kind of very straight lines and kind of bent knee. And so it had a sort of a similar framework about it, let's say, as a body.
The project started having a long leg going down, and that really reminded us about the flamingo that had this long leg and then the body with this triangulation system. But then due to the site, we couldn't have the leg, but we really like the idea of the flamingo anyway.
That's right.
So sometimes things like a bone get, you know, get at some point in one way and then something changed, but we still like it.
The spirit of the flamingo is still in.
It's still
absolutely
there.
It's going to happen somewhere at some point.
Amazing.
Yeah, so we were designing a site-specific piece for Villa Borsani, and yeah, so this time it doesn't quite look like a flamingo, but next time.
It's so good. I love how playful your pieces are, and there's always like a lot of emotion and like nature. And,
We feel like it's a continuous conversation, right? It's not that we design things and they're fixed forever. It's a journey.
That was Christopher Coombs and Christiana Giappato of Giappato and Coombs. So, Nick, I want to know why your eyes are just so droopy today. What events have you been to? Which cocktail parties have you been popping up at and leaving to go to another one?
Well, because I think this is it. I mean, I guess a big part of Milan Design Week is the conversations that you have. It's this huge cross-pollinating event. But again, it's just this moment of, I guess, you know, this is the start and end of the design calendar, and it's this sort of moment for people to come together, to collaborate, to talk, to celebrate. So it is business. It is still business, but, you know, sometimes you have to party hard. But it's also meant that I've had the chance to meet and talk with some amazing people. We're going to hear next from a conversation I had with Matteo Tun, who's a brilliant architect who's launching a book during Salone del Mobile Week.
First of all, I believe in wood. I believe that the construction material of this century is wood, and concrete is completely over. I'm just back from Japan, and I've seen a lot of concrete architecture. I think it doesn't last well. The patina of wood is creating a wonderful surface, and after hundreds and hundreds of years, wood is always better and nicer.
So your materials, I guess, are a priority for you going forward.
Our message in the office is timeless sensoriality. And sensoriality, that's all about. I mean, look at the Japanese or look at the Korean shows happening this week. Everybody's talking about Japan, everybody's talking about Korea, and everybody is looking for sensoriality.
And what does sensoriality, including fashion. What does sensoriality mean? Are we experiencing?
I want to touch. I want to touch with my eyes. I want to feel with my fingers.
So it's about, I guess, wanting people to engage with the architecture, with the furniture.
With furniture, with design, with architecture, there is no difference, because sensoriality belongs to the small scale and the big scale.
And you, because you also said timelessness there as well. What does timelessness mean for you as an architect? How do you design for timelessness?
Timeless, first of all, means try to avoid design. Design with the big D or the big A of big architecture. I really don't like architecture that lasts for a few years and then it's over. That means even if we are not published now, we are going to publish hopefully in 100 years.
So, I mean, how do you set about making an architecture that doesn't get tired, that is still relevant after a few years' time? What are some of the approaches you use?
My approach is very simple. Simplicity, simplicity, simplicity. Do it as simple as you can. Our life is quite complex.
So if we have simple architecture, we want to keep using it, we want to keep it around, we want to spend time in it. Is that your sort of...
Bravo, you understood.
I've passed the test. I mean, so we've got timeless sensoriality. I mean, what are there other hallmarks, are there other like traits that you've learned over the past 40 years that you always bring into your work?
Yes, try to reduce, try to become simpler, try to do it as simple as you can, because construction sites are quite complex. And reducing complexity means reducing the engineering approach is far too complex. And as an architect, we have to avoid that complexity starts with over-engineering.
And if we stop over-engineering, we come back to that simplicity, which gives it timelessness. Is that sort of, it's all kind of linked together.
It's linked together, bravo.
I mean, can I get a job at your architecture studio? It feels like we're on the same wavelength here. Is that a possibility?
Let's try.
Okay. I've got an internship coming up. I mean, I guess, but just finally, are there any big messages? You know, we've got a big audience that include a lot of designers, but also people that aren't designers. I mean, are there any, I guess, messages that you're hoping you want to get out through this book? We have sort of touched on it, but I guess, what are the takeaways? Why should somebody buy or pick up a copy of Stories by Matteo Tun?
First of all, I think curiosity is definitely given, because a lot of stories, even my wife and my children don't know. So it's a lot of new things to discover, and definitely, as a non-architect, this book is going to be more interesting. I think architects are always interested in architecture, and that's not my case.
That was Matteo Tun. He's the founder of Matteo Tun & Partners, and this year marks the 40th anniversary of his studio, as well as the release of his new book, Stories, which you can pick up in all good bookstores now. I mean, Grace, we're going to come back to you, another interview that you've done. I mean, tell us who you've picked next.
Well, I caught up with Yves Béard. He is design royalty, I would say. He's huge. He's the founder of Fuse Project, which actually he bought back 6 months ago. So he's back on Fuse Project.
That's kind of a scoop in a way.
It's
6 months old, but it's still good news. It's exciting.
Yeah, it is really exciting. He seemed super happy about it. But he's currently in Milan to present with Mooi, a Dutch furniture manufacturing company. He's created a couch called Peaks. And it's super playful, it's modular, you can change it around. He already experimented with his kids on the design of it, so you know it's approved by, you know, the young ones.
It's got the sign off by the youth.
Oh yeah, the youth is on board. But yeah, no, he's super cool. He's Swiss, but he's based in California, and I think he really does bring that Swiss functionality and, you know, engineering mindset, and then adds a little bit more sort of, you know, California relaxed spirituality.
And I know he also works a lot from Portugal, so you add that, there's this calming presence to him, and I think that does come across in his work and in this new project.
So when you come into the showroom at Mooi, the first thing you'll see is the Peaks couch. It's sitting there. We have an animation that shows a family basically playing in it with many different configurations. And we're, you know, it's a preview, and just watching people get on it and move it and have a big aha moment when they see how easily it reconfigures itself is just part of the fun for me.
Do you think that's like the value of Salone, sort of getting prototypes out there and seeing how people react? And like, is that where you come to Milan?
I mean, traditionally, you know, 20 years ago when I used to come to Salone, it was mostly experiments. It was less product launches, it was less commercial in a sense. It was more experimental. It was more about design, trying things, you know, being sort of all out, you know, sort of creative. And I feel Milan is always a great testing ground. Now it's a mix of students and young designers and older designers that are experimenting, but it's also a lot of launches and a lot of commercial projects being presented.
Is there anything in particular you're going to make sure to stop by and see?
Well, I wanted to come here to see some of the work of the Ecal. So I didn't realize you were housed in the same space, so that's good. And I have, you know, a lot of visits to make at Artemide and Wonderglass and other places where I feel there's always wonderful projects being shown every year.
Yeah, I didn't realize. Of course, you went to Ecal, didn't you?
No, I didn't go to Ecal. It's from my hometown. The Ecal is from my hometown, and I'm very familiar with it, and I've lectured there. But I actually went to Art Center College of Design.
Oh, sorry. I don't know why I thought Ecal, because you're from Lausanne. So
because it's, like, yeah, it's okay. The local school.
Actually, maybe we could talk about how being Swiss, based in California, how do you like blend those two sort of influences in your work more broadly? Because also your work is so broad. You've done cars, you've done like products, you do technology, like, yeah.
Well, for me, design has always been about the opportunities to be diverse, to try new things, to learn. And the learning part has been extraordinary. I mean, I'm working on a car interior and the entire vehicle, you know, for Tello, for example, as you know. And we're hoping to present it. We'll have full-size functioning vehicles by the end of the year. And maybe we'll even bring them to Milan.
Oh, yeah.
But for me, the Swiss background is probably more about wanting things to work really, really well. You know, it's that sense of engineering and that sense of precise realization of an idea that sometimes initially seems impossible or seems original and different enough that it requires good thinking and good manufacturing and good engineering. So I'm never afraid of taking risks, and I'm never afraid. It's part of my DNA. It's part of the thrill of design, is trying new things. But at the same time, you have to have the other side of it, which is flawless execution of it.
And then I feel like with the California, you bring a little bit more spirituality. Like you were talking about the triangles representing fire and, you know, femininity and masculinity. Like, is that also something that maybe has imbued your work?
There's definitely much more spiritual thinking in, you know, that I've discovered in the last 25 years in California that has come into my work. Simply, you know, growing up being confronted with many different philosophies from all around the world, because it's a place of diversity, has brought, you know, an opening to many ideas, you know, from the hippies to all the way to the sort of technological mindset. And so it's a big blend of all these ideas. But I do feel like you need to put heart, you need to put spirituality into your work, because that's also what, you know, lets it acquire meaning for yourself and maybe eventually for others.
For sure. But maybe you need both to actually create connectedness that means something.
I agree.
Yeah. So yeah, amazing. Is there anything else you'd like to add? Any projects you'd like to plug?
Well, there's a lot in the works, and the last 3 years have been interesting because I have an office and a foot in Europe, in Portugal, in Lisbon, and my office in San Francisco. And as you may have heard, I purchased Fuse Project back about 6 months ago. And so it's a really exciting time, and there is an upcoming boom in San Francisco, believe it or not. A lot of people are surprised when I say that, but it's there's a lot of very sort of human-centric technologies that I think will be available and that we as designers will have access to, which I find very exciting.
That was Yves Béard.
And what he's presenting, obviously, with Moy, but anything else on the horizon for him?
Well, he's also designing a truck called the Tello truck, and I already spoke about it with him a few months ago, but it's finally, I think, going to sort of enter production in the next few months. But it's really fun. It's a pickup truck, fully electric, and I kind of want one.
I can see you rolling around the streets of London in that. Finally on today's show, we have an interview our very own Milan-based Europe editor, Ed Stocker, conducted with Kieran McGuigan, the creative director at Oriel. They're an Irish family-run furniture firm whose workshop infuses traditional Irish furniture-making principles with new passion and ideas.
We try to have like a sort of an 80-20 rule, right, where we try to use the majority of our pieces and materials come from our island. The stone being one of them, you know, the new collection, which is the almost, I call them sculptures masquerading as planters. We've used three different stones from three different parts of Ireland, which is interesting to see the different colours that erect from the earth in that sort of manner.
Is that easy? Is Ireland sort of well set up for using stone?
But like when you it's funny when you think of, well, I do anyways, when I think of Irish design, I kind of always revert back to like heritage and craft and arts and craft versus what we're doing. You know, you've got a few guys, Joseph Walsh and Niamh Barry, that from a artistic standpoint have beautiful product, and the craftsmanship that goes into each of those pieces, whether it be lighting or furniture from Joseph's standpoint, it's just unbelievable. But I don't think anyone has really, really put Irish design from a furniture standpoint on the map. You think of, you know, musicians and poets, you know, actors. There is the world in its mother in Ireland. There's just so much talent there. But on the design front, I think one of the biggest things for me when I came into Oriel was like, how do we push that forward? How do we have that attitude? How do we have that, you know, design sensibility that registers on a global stage? And we always thought that New York would be a really cool platform for that. Logistically, I think, as we said offline, it's not, you know, not in LA, you're not the other side of the world.
You still feel connected time zone wise to Europe, etc.
You're a 5-6 hour flight away. My wife and I joke that when we head back to Ireland, it's like our upstate. You know, we get to have the
Get there quicker.
Yeah. We kind of have the hustle and bustle of New York City and the energy, and it's intoxicating. I love every second of it. It's amazing. And then we get to jump on a flight and head back, and then you just are completely brought down to earth. You're like, you're humbled in a big, big way, which is awesome. And as soon as you step onto that factory floor, as soon as you start working with the makers and the experience and the knowledge, you know, my old man often says that knowledge is no burden. Like having that expertise and being able to like communicate that effectively back and forth with, you know, ourselves. Like I didn't study design, but I've got ideas. Same as Jordan, who's our brand director. You know, we all met at college. We have our, what we would call our main man is a Norwegian guy called Jean, or as he introduces himself as Jean. He is so talented and so incredible, and him and my old man have this phenomenal relationship where they just speak the same language, so them two in a room, and it's just a lot of really cool stuff happens from it.
Has your market shifted with the move to New York? As in, are you very sort of Americas based or not at all?
Yeah, 100%. 98% of our product. We have, you know, one container, 140-foot container leaves Ireland every week and heads to the States. Some weeks there's two, some weeks there's three. It's, yeah, 98% is to the US based. And again, we made a conscious decision back in sort of 2013, 2014, when we were going to venture into that market, that we were going to go full tilt into it.
Do you want to grow elsewhere as well, or
absolutely.
Is the focus still the US?
No, I mean, the focus is the US for now, and being a part of that sort of design community and working with some of the best designers in the world. You know, we don't take that for granted. We're very fortunate and very privileged. But I'm also confident enough to stand up and say that the product deserves to be in the locations that they're speccing them for. And so the product is that good, and it's an Irish product, which is now, you know, after sort of, I guess, 10 years of being in the States, you know, you kind of put your chest out and chin up a little bit, and we're like, yeah, it's that good. So it's all the US for now, but as I said, we've got ambitions to kind of be in different markets over the forthcoming years, and something that we're working towards.
Do you draw a lot of inspiration being here in the city during this week? Are you hoping to have a lot of conversations, maybe even find collaborations for the future?
I mean, it's hard not to, right? You know, there's a reason why this city attracts so many people during these sort of few days. I used the word intoxicating earlier. It's the same when you rock up in here. Conversations start one way and could end up somewhere else, and you just don't know where it's going to take you. I think we came here last year with our team, and it's just a really nice break. It's a nice break for the team to get out of New York, but also just see loads of different opportunities and see inspirations at every kind of juncture, which is great. It's so hard not to. It's just everywhere.
Obviously, we've been talking about your sculptural planters this year, but yeah. Give us a taster. I'm sure there's a lot. What have you got coming up? What are some future projects we can expect?
You know, I think what I love about our collection as a whole is that you've got multiple different pieces, either it be a credenza or an armoire or a sofa. And it might not look as part of a collection, but it's all designed and made by Aurier. And so we're just continuing to have these, I kind of call it conversations all the time, because it's me and the lads in a studio in New York, and we're just talking about what shapes and forms or what's inspired us one week, and we kind of look to see, okay, what haven't we done just yet, and what are we looking to do? We're doing this really cool drinks cabinet at the moment, and we're doing a new dining table, and just, yeah, it's like there's no one forcing us to do X, Y, and Z. We never put out like a holistic collection of 5 or 6 or 7 pieces at one time. We do individual items and products that kind of stand alone as its own entity.
So you do what feels right rather than being pushed in sort of to do this
kind
collection.
Of, yeah, exactly. And it's really organic. And I feel because we kind of have that nonchalant approach to it, on the back end, some really good stuff comes from it.
That was Kieran McGuigan from Aurier.
So, Nick, what are your highlights? What have you seen and enjoyed so far?
I think what's kind of fascinating about this week is it is a design week, but you see all the fashion houses presenting and having this sort of creep into the design world, and they bring their fashion budgets to design. So, I mean, I stopped past Loro Piana, for instance. You know, I'm known for their amazing cashmere sweaters, but also did a brilliant showcase, rather, on Cina Boeri, who's an amazing Italian architect, presented a host of her furniture and just, I guess, showed the fact that, much like their clothing, it can stand the test of time. It's sort of this timeless architectural forms. That alongside, you know, we talked about Bottega a little bit earlier, but Loewe has done this amazing presentation with lamps. You've got Hermes, which I am going to a little bit later. You've already checked that out. I mean,
it's
tell us
cool.
about that.
It's super cool. They've brought out all these like pieces from the archive. I didn't know they made jockey shirts. So they've got these silk jockey shirts with like, you know, really cool geometric patterns, which are then picked up in the design, the colors. There's like so much of a conversation with the past and the present, as cheesy as that sounds, but it's true. And yeah, just incredible pieces, a lot of handcraft, a lot of, you know, tapping into their knowledge as a fashion brand and working with leather, because obviously they started as an equestrian brand, making bridles.
Are they showing those or no?
Yeah, they are. They've even got whips and stuff like that. It's really, really cool. I would recommend stopping by.
I think I will. That is a very good recommendation. Thank you very much, Grace Charlton. And that's all for today's show, which was produced by Steph Chungu. Join us next week for a Monocle on Design recap of Milan Design Week and Salone del Mobile. Until then, thank you and goodbye.